This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Murder, lies, and a trail of digital breadcrumbs. Sometimes real life plays out like a crime thriller. Except there's no Hollywood ending in the case that we're about to talk about. Diving into the chilling case of 13-year-old Madeline Soto, whose disappearance led investigators down a rabbit hole of disturbing secrets. At the center of it all, Stefan Stearns, a man once trusted by Maddie's family, now facing not just murder charges, but also a staggering 60 sex-related offenses, which were uncovered in the investigation. With so much evidence, digital footprints, forensic findings, and the web of deceit, we're kind of left asking, what really happened to Maddie, and how does someone like Stearns rationalize these crimes? Joining us today, retired FBI Special Agent Robin Dreek, and I'm really curious to get your thoughts on some of this as we dive into the mind here of Stefan Stearns. When you look at this case, all the alleged double life of him, the way he reportedly manipulated trust and hid in plain sight, what stands out to you the most from a behavioral analysis perspective, and how do investigators piece together the truth when a suspect like this is basically, you know, a known, experienced liar?
Yeah. Well, luckily for investigators, he didn't cover his tracks very well at all. I mean, we say this term a lot, broken brain. He literally had a broken brain. Normally, this is the first case I've covered, and granted, I'm just not my typical area I cover. But in the other cases that I've covered with child murders and definitely pedophiles, these individuals that commit the crimes, typically from what I've seen, have escalated. They've escalated from their own childhood trauma. They've been abused earlier in life. There's always some broken household and dysfunction that happened earlier in life that became their arc to doing the heinous things they wound up doing. From what I understand from Stefan, his background was he had a traumatic brain injury that it shifted his behavior, and that's what his parents are saying as well. And so from that point on and I've actually researched this is where, you know, people can go down that dark road of the things he was doing, and he was doing it a lot. So the self-incriminating evidence that he had on his cell phone and other digital devices, it's profound, it's there. Mm-hmm. And that's why also I'm glad that they're prosecuting it separately. They have him as a child sex offender, mm-hmm. as well as on the murder. It's two separate cases they're going after him for, and most likely convicted of both.
Yeah, I mean, one of them, is pretty clear cut. I mean, this stuff is on his phone. Yep. It's him in the picture with Maddie, a child. That's, you know, I don't even know how you plead not guilty to that one. But, you know, it's there. That's really cut and dry. And so is the other one. It seems fairly cut and dry as well. They can trace him back to where he went. He's on camera dumping stuff off. It's, you know, they're both very, you know, clearly there. What struck me the most was just the bizarreness of his interview, his interrogation. You've obviously been in situations like that, talking to people. Well, I've never done it like that with anyone, but you know, you've had experience there. What is it like when you have someone who, you know, like they did something wrong and it's bad, but they're able to kind of sit there and still rationalize it in their mind? How do you break through that? How do you build trust with that person to get them to come out and say something? Obviously, Stefan is saying he's not guilty, but I mean, that to me was such a trying video to watch, seeing him try to go through that and try to rationalize what he was doing.
There's numerous things going on there with what you said. So first of all, if you're going to inspire someone to share with you and trust you, the worst thing you can do in the world is take their shame and show it to them. Because as soon as you show someone their shame, they shut up, they close down, they don't want to communicate. So that's part of it. So you have to have deep, deep active empathy, and not empathy that you sympathize with them. Empathy from the point of view, you understand their context. In order to understand their context, you have to listen to the words they're sharing, because he was non-emotionally responsive in a way that you and I would be, because we see the behavior as abhorrent. It's broken. It's horrendous. But in his context, it wasn't. I've had a case before, I think I've mentioned it on our show before, was that from their point of view, he was showing love. He also said to his parents, she started it.
Jesus.
So from his point of view, from his context, he's the victim. So in order to, because when you said trust, how do you get someone to trust you in those situations? You actually have to validate that opinion. Validating means that doesn't mean you agree. You seek to understand that. And so you then ask what questions, like what would inspire you to want to do that? What do you think made her cause her to think that way about you? You know, so you're kind of reversing that context. You're doing what law enforcement officers call, use rationalizations, projections, and minimizers. You rationalize their behavior to themselves and help them do that because that lowers their shields. You project the blame as she's already doing onto her. And you minimize it. Well, it could have been much worse. You know, and so you, when you do those things, you're lowering their shields. So you're bringing them right over to the brink of pushing them off that cliff of self-incrimination. And you give them hope by, well, if you just share this with me, maybe we can make this go away. We can make this a little bit better. And so during the interviews, so that's the interview strategy when you're trying to inspire someone to share with you. But then dealing with him as a manipulator and a liar, he's got life reps of believing his own shit.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be, he's not going to be responding in ways that we would normally see others. In other words, when you don't think you've done anything wrong, it's why the polygraph's not admissible in court, because a polygraph is a is measuring physiological responses to outside stimulus, basically.
Mm-hmm.
When you think you've done something wrong or you think you're about to lie, we have physiological responses, fight or flight kicks in, adrenaline, you know, our sweat glands, our heart rate, our breathing rate, all these things respond when we think we've done something wrong, we're about to be caught. And that's what a polygraph's measuring. That's what an investigator is watching for. That's what we as human beings are observing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know, I guarantee you this with your daughter. When your daughter comes home from school, you know if she's had a good day or a bad day.
Yeah.
Because we're seeing deviations from baseline. We're seeing physiological responses. Now, when someone believes their own lies and they think they're doing good by others, you get that flat response, that non-response. And so when we're seeing the interviews by him and we're seeing him being interacting with law enforcement and with his girlfriend, we're seeing this kind of flat monotone response. Well, because it's just everyday. It's just an everyday occurrence to him. It doesn't have a response. That's why it takes a really, really good interviewer to be able to lower their shields to have this kind of conversation. And the way they're going to get around it, they can use a lot of what we call word bridging. So when you ask a question, we're going to use a lot of word bridging to get around the thing that we're actually saying. There are going to be a lot of omissions because people don't want to lie. And so they avoid lying by omitting. Mm-hmm. They avoid lying by diverting. And so they use a lot of word modifiers. Instead of direct answers, they're going to modify that answer with maybe, sometimes, I'm not sure, not to my recollection. Those are the modifiers that they're going to be using. So, yeah, it takes a skilled interviewer with a lot of reps to kind of break that and see it. Because it's very, very hard to see with someone such a skilled manipulator. They're playing on you. They're watching what you're responding to so they know what triggers to hit or not hit with you as an individual.
And that's just how they seem to operate. Do they even realize that they're doing that? Or is that just kind of like, this is how it goes? And the rest of the world just doesn't understand that I was showing love when I was doing these horrible, horrible things. But they're not even registering it as horrible. It's just, well, you guys just don't understand. You know, he has that little talk that shitty little voice of his where it's, well, you know, it's just this, it's just that. That always kind of feels like what I was getting out of him when we were watching some of those interviews of a lot of it was just.
Yeah, well, what these pedophiles do is when they're grooming a child, they're part of that grooming process is them identifying their own insecurities, they're identifying, you know, their pain points that this child has, and then they're love bombing those pain points in a way that no one else is. And they're saying, I'm the only one that understands you, and I'll be doing this for you. And so they're love bombing that. So that's how they're also rationalizing their own behavior themselves. I'm showing them love and in an area that no one else has shown before. I'm showing them that they are pretty. I'm showing that they are valued. So they're doing all these creepy things and because they're identifying the insecurities in the child. And they're playing on those insecurities like a cult leader does as well. And then they're grooming them onto that, well, I'm the only one that can do this. And so they're not only doing it for the child,
mm-hmm.
but they're also doing it for their own rationalization. because, well, I'm just doing these things. I'm just here for them like no one else would be here. And so that's why they groom them into that. And then they'll get them to take that action. Then a lot of times after they take that action, then they'll shame them into not sharing. They'll make it their own special relationship, and you don't have a special relationship with anyone else like me. We need to keep it secret to ourselves because someone would want to come in between us. And this is the creepiness that these people go through.
What about Jen Soto? It's been a long time since we talked about her. That's obviously the mom in this case who, you know, she was letting him stay at her place. This happened, you know, in a bedroom in her house or whatever it was. And she flat out let them sleep together and seemed to think nothing of it. Is she a victim here too? Was she groomed, you know, by him to rationalize and normalize these things where at that point in time she was thinking, oh, this is normal, this is healthy, he would never do anything like that, even though it's a really weird thing to be doing, sleeping with your girlfriend's 13-year-old daughter? I mean, is there blame to go there? Do you think we're ever going to see anything? It's a lot.
I just think of her and I just get so disgusted.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've you know, Dark jokingly talked about how some parents should not be issued a parent card.
Yeah.
She should have had hers revoked for what she used her daughter for. And that's exactly what happened was. So, yes, she was groomed into doing this, kinda. But she's got such her own broken brain going, her own insecurities going, that she was so terrified of losing the only validation in her mind that she was getting from him, that she was using her daughter as a screwdriver, as a tool in her own life to keep him. Mm-hmm. You know, the entire focus is always on him during every single interview, during everything, and the impact of him going to jail on her. I mean, it had nothing to do with, she totally ignored Maddie there, this entire thing. You know, yeah. She threw out the name now and then because she thought she was supposed to. But she was so broken as an individual. And so, yes, I think it was both a combination of all horrendous choices mm-hmm. as a human being and as a mother, as she was also groomed by him. So I, you know, here's some really horrible conjecture. If it wasn't him, it would have been someone else. She was abusing her daughter through using her as a tool in her own life.
Sure. No, I can see that. I am wondering, I know a lot of us are still baffled. There's never been charges brought against her for any of this. And maybe it's because she's cooperating and she's helping the investigation along. And that's the answer. She's just very, very broken, a very pathetic, broken human being that, you know, this is what you get. But I also wonder a little bit, too, are we going to see charges maybe after Stefan Stearns is convicted, or assuming he will be convicted, and then sentenced, you know, a la, you know, almost Donna Adelson, where it's like, we're going to take him down one by one here, but we need her out here in this place right now. I don't know the answer to that question, or if it's just, what are we going to punish her for, being an idiot? I mean, she's just going to keep, I don't know. I don't know if it's just you kind of write this off going, she's so broken. She's a victim as well.
Yeah, I don't know. That'll be really interesting because I think she's definitely complicit. There's no doubt in my mind she's complicit, but she hasn't been charged for anything. But same time, though, she was always defending him, and he seems to be more in line, as well as the parents, of throwing her under the bus. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how much evidence he has of her being complicit in this to throw her under the bus, to bring her down with him, maybe. I don't know. But he... every action he ever took was for himself. Every action she ever took was for him. So it'll be interesting how that plays out.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.